live from CFI Boot Camp in Miami Beach, Florida. This is the Power Hour. Welcome. And happy Saturday. Welcome to Power Hour 232. In June, we'll have done 5 years of Power Hours every Saturday. That isn't a holiday or something comes up. Not very often. So anyway, lots of these. Lots of water under the bridge. So the format, let me go through the format of the show for you today. Move some things around a little bit so we can see things more clearly. The format of the show will be an hour, the first one, and it will have Wings credit. So when you're looking for Wings credit, it'll be in the chat at the appropriate time. And I'll let you know when I see it fly in there. Someone will say something. But anyway, that's how you get Wings credit. It's the only way you can get Wings credit. If you try to put it in the chat or something or send an email, it probably won't get done. So if you click onto that, it's an automated process, and then it doesn't take less, but it doesn't take very much effort to get it up to FA. So we'll do that. So make sure you go onto you put your email onto there, and that's how you get Wings credit for this. So then about halfway through the program, about 25 minutes from now, we'll take a short break. I'll review some of the stuff that we have that might be appropriate for this, and any special announcements, and I'll tell you then. And then we'll continue on with it, and then we'll close it out at 1 o'clock. And then there'll be a second hour. The second hour doesn't have – it's not for Wings credit, but we're going to have a guest speaker, Greg Brown, who – overall good guy from Flagstaff, Arizona, who wrote The Savvy Flight Instructor that you can buy from ASA or Amazon. And also he wrote The Determined Pilot's Manual and some other things. So he's been a flight instructor for a long time, and he has some really good ideas about Part 61 flight instructors and how to make things go your way. So I'm going to let him – I don't want to steal his thunder. So we're going to let him do that in the second hour. And he's got a presentation of around, I think, about 20 minutes or so. And then he'll open up for Q&A so you can ask questions directly to Greg. A few little things before we get started. One is, if you're a CFI in training or you're a CFI in general, I guess, or you're just curious, I guess, but mainly you're a CFI, you want to go to the Facebook study group. There's one called CFI Study Group. It's in Facebook, and it's run by Dorothy. You'll know. So the administrator is Dorothy Schick, and Facebook Study Group, because it's a really good place to go, because they do a two-hour Zoom call every Tuesday from 4 to 6 Pacific time, 7 to 9 Eastern, and it's kind of open format, and people can present lesson plans if they want, or they can – a number of topics come out of there, just sometimes just hangar talk or whatever. So that's what that is. And the last thing I'll just say before we start is you should join SAFE, Society of Aviation Flight Educators, and that's going to cost you almost nothing if you use 4Flight. So it's an organization that represents us, flight instructors, flight educators, about 7,000 to 10,000, I think, and that is the membership. And they connect you to industry and to FAA by blogs. They have SAFE Toolkit. It's a little app. But the reason you want to join, there's a bigger reason. It's a selfish reason. You get a third off your 4Flight subscription. So you pay, say, $55 and you get whatever, a third off your 4Flight. So it's not going to cost you anything, if anything. It saves me money. But anyway, that's that. So now we'll get rolling here with the topic of the day. I just wanted to get those little things off the plate. We're not affiliated with any of those organizations. It's not like a money thing for us. It's just we like them. So you can also join NAFI. NAFI will also, National Association of Flight Instructors, will give you a third off 4Flight as well. So anyway, we'll put some links in there. So this particular thing is a hot button for me, this lesson plan stuff. As you know, there's two big things that I hate. One of them is making your own lesson plans. I hated that, and I also think it's a waste of time, well, certain things. And then the other thing, I think, is the format of the whole thing. So those are the things I really don't like. I also don't like that thing, the circular slide rule. Okay, let's say that. Let's call it that. I call it the thing, because like in theater and Shakespeare, you know, there's a particular name of a play you can't say if you're in theater, or you get bad luck. So they just call it the Scottish play. So I call that thing the thing, and the plotter, I can say that word, that's the other thing, and the paper charts are the things you can never find anymore. So that's the things, right? So, but anyway, this topic is quite near and dear to me, because I have figured it out. It took a long time. This took a long time to figure out, and I'm going to show you how you can make it work for you. Okay, so let's step through the presentation first. Let's just do that.
So for those who don't know me, I won't bore you with all this stuff, but I've been flying a long time. I'm a former National Flight Instructor of the Year. I wrote for flight training for years. Some of you may have known my column, Flying Carpet, that was in there about the adventure of flying, and sort of the carrot column in there, showing people why they were learning to fly. And I was even a Barnes and Noble Arizona Author of the Month for one of my books. So these are the books that I've written, and today's talk, most of it is from The Savvy Flight Instructor. And this book, I'm really proud of this because it addresses what's going to happen, what you're going to do to be successful as an instructor. It's not about how teaching maneuvers. It's not about syllabus. It's not about lesson plans. It's about the being successful as a flight instructor, how you deal with difficult students, how you charge for your services and how much, a lot of motivational types of things, the business of flight instructing, records you should keep and so on. So I know a lot of you from the various groups I'm involved in. After all your work, you earn your CFI, you walk out of there proud and excited, and then it's like, oh man, now what? How am I going to start this? Well, that's what this book is about. This is all about what you can do to be successful as a CFI starting the day you get it. There is a coverage there about earning your CFI too, but that's almost an introductory level. And then one other book, well, some of you will know the Turbine Pilot's Manual. If you're going to go up into turbine aircraft, covers the basics of turbine aircraft. So you know what all the systems are. It's not specific to any airplane, but you know what bleeds are, you know what N1 is, you know what how the different systems work in a turbine aircraft. Really valuable prior to interviews and prior to ground school. And then one other book I want to mention real quickly here, Flying Carpet. This sprung from my column. This is a book of general aviation flying adventures. It's written for someone who's not a pilot, though of course it's for pilots too, but I explain everything in it. And it's a wonderful way to share lessons with people while telling them interesting stories. It's great for your students. If you have students who like to read and you want to immerse them in general aviation, that's what I wrote that book for. Also, some of you may be familiar with my podcast. This is available on all the platforms or on my website. The most recent podcast, and I'll mention this again later, number 36, the most recent episode, is about some of the interesting scares and anomalies that I've experienced while instructing. So if you listen to podcasts and you don't want to hear any of the rest of them, but I encourage you to listen to the latest episode called Bowling Alley Hot Dogs. And I'll remind you of that at the end of the session here. Okay, so folks, where I want to start with this, I know we have a really broad audience here. We've got, people who are thinking about becoming flight instructors. We have, of course, many people who are prepping to become flight instructors. We have some current instructors. Some of you are involved with academies. Some of you are involved with mom and pop type operations. And so I'm going to try and address this in the broadest way I can. And I know some parts of this will focus more on some folks than others. Where I want to start is the job hunting aspect. And the reason I want to talk about this, not only are we entering a period, as pilot hiring is down a bit. All of a sudden, there are instructors who are looking for positions again and having a little bit of a rough time. And then the process that I want to mention to you, this would apply for those of you who want to go on beyond flight instructing and do other things. This is the process by which you advance your career more rapidly. Okay? So here's an old ad from the really dark times when it's hard to get a job. Wanted a pilot for a fast-growing, well-established, small country FBO. Has to have an ATP. Look at all these type ratings here. 15, 20 type ratings, and there's even a qualification on here, a PhD in aeronautical engineering and 1,000 hours in an SR-71. 500 hours in the space shuttle is desirable, though not required. Sometimes we all feel like that when we're applying for a job, right? When we're looking for a position. So the question is, how do we make this happen? Well, and I'm showing this in an analog way with paper because it's easier to show it this way than on a computer. But the bottom line is, right, that typically we're contacting everyone we can with resumes, applications, and so on, and waiting and hoping to hear back. So we all know that feeling where we sent out all this stuff, right? And it's not going anywhere. Now, let's think about this for a second. Does the most experienced pilot always get the job? Well, let's take a look at a couple pilots here. Okay, we got a fledgling and Zipro are the two pilots applying for the job. Okay, they're both looking for their first CFI position. And you can see that the fledglings is really at the absolute minimum of time, right? Got through the CFI mighty quickly. And then we got someone with a lot more experience, got a couple type ratings, has the multi-engine CFI as well as, the MEI as well as the other ratings. So who's going to get the job if these are the two people competing? It's Pilot B, right? It's Z Pro, has a lot more experience. Now, one of the challenges we all face with this experience thing is no matter how experienced we are, somebody else has more, right? More ratings, more time, more hours. So this is always an issue. So I'm going to add one more credential. Okay, you ready? Who is going to get hired here? Assuming that Pilot A, the fledgling, knows somebody and has the minimum requirements to meet the job. And that's when I say knows somebody, that somebody knows the fledgling well enough to respect them and think they have great potential and all that. So obviously they've made a good impression. But at the same time, this is the key. Now, we all know this thing that floats around that says, yeah, well, it's more who you know than what you know. And that's not entirely true. We'll come back to that in a minute, but let's just think about why who you know is important, okay? This is the chief flight instructor's desk or the owner's. Those are stacks of resumes. Okay? And let's look at who's in those stacks. So you got the big stack. That's most of us. We've sent in our resume, we've applied online, whatever. And we're somewhere in this gigantic stack. And right there is the best qualified pilot, Terry Dactyl. Some of you may know him. A lot of stuff went in the garbage because it didn't meet some minimum requirements. Then you got the friends and acquaintances of company current instructors, right? And then you've got friends and acquaintances of the chief pilot or the chief flight instructor herself or himself, right? So the bottom line is, sure, everybody wants to be judged on their qualifications, but how often are they even going to look at Stack C, the chief pilot, if he or she has good people in Stacks A and B and they're known quantities either to themselves personally or to their employees, right? So we want to get into Stack A and Stack B, one or one or the other. So I want to change the old saying, it's who you know, not what you know. No, that's not right. It is what you know and who you know. You got to be qualified. You got to be good. And you're not going to keep the job if you're not good and you don't know your stuff. So it is what you know. But it's also who you know is what speeds things up. Now, anybody who's been in sales can tell you that you got to work a lot of leads in order to make a sale. And I did a little bit of survey work at one time about how many cold calls it takes to make one sale. So let's just look at cameras for a second. The camera salesperson told me that she had to be in contact with 20 people she didn't know who knew nothing about it to make one sale. Okay? Qualified prospects means that they're at least looking for a camera and they've done some homework and so on. She only needed to talk to four of those. When it came to referrals, if two people were referred to her, she would get one sale. So you can see that the ratio here, when we just mail in resumes and applications, we're in that cold call column. So you have to have a lot of prospects out there to hire you who are looking for people. Well, I should say you have to have a lot of prospects out there to get a job if you don't have any connections. Does that make sense? Now, let's look at another way of looking at this. Here's a timeline for a whole pilot career. And you can see on the left there, here's the career ladder, right? The entry-level job, that's for many of us, that'll be a flight instructor position if we're going on beyond that, if it's not our end goal. So what people typically do is they'll build experience, and then you see that gray block working while pursuing the next job. Most people don't start making contacts for the next job or applying or doing prep for it until they meet the qualifications. But if you do that networking while, you know, from the beginning, if you're always thinking ahead and making an effort to meet people who might help you at the next step, even though you're not qualified yet, look what happens. There's the one on the right. We got rid of those gray areas and we started networking right from the beginning. Now, I figuratively call the one on the left, it takes you 10 years to get to your jet job or whatever. And on the right, it takes 6 years. Well, who knows exactly what those numbers are. But the bottom line is you want to make this getting to know people thing part of your process from early on. And if you can be meeting some airline, making some airline contacts, if that's your goal, while you're flight instructing and even while you're still working on your commercial, that stuff will help you when the time is right, because you don't want to wait till you're qualified to start looking for the next position if you're going to do networking, and networking helps. So what's networking? I think you all know this. You want to make contacts with as many people as you can, let them know who you are and where you're headed, and hopefully they introduce you to other people and you build this larger network. You meet people along the way, and as you know, we're really lucky. Aviation is a friendly business. Where a student pilot and a 787 captain can be good buddies the moment they meet just because they're both pilots. Now, what I recommend you do, and again, this is, I'm showing all this on pieces of paper. Most of you are going to have more efficient ways to do this digitally, but it helps explain it. When you meet somebody who you want to stay in touch with, it's a good idea to make a few notes to yourself, remind yourself what this person is interested in, and so that if you start developing a number of leads for different kinds of positions, you remember enough so that when you communicate with them, you have got background. This person collects cars, you know, this person's into old airplanes and owns a Waco, whatever. And it's a good idea with those folks who you think are really good leads to make sure you're in contact with them maybe at least once a month. There's a couple reasons for this. One is you want to be remembered. You want to stay in touch. Another thing, this is really critical when you're in the active job hunting mode. because Ambrosian Airlines there at the beginning, at the time you apply, they may be fully booked up. They've got all kinds of pilots. They're never going to need anybody again. And so your inclination is to say, well, so much for them. I'm done with it. But you want to be there hanging out in August, still on their radar when all of a sudden three of their pilots leave for a major and they need someone right now. The same thing with flight instructing business, right? They got all the instructors they need right now. Well, they may get a whole lot more student pilots, customers in the future. One day, they may have a bunch of CFIs leave when hiring picks up. All of a sudden, they're desperate, and they know your name, and they know how to reach you, and they know who you are. That's why you want to stay in touch with these people. Social media is a great way to stay in touch. Dropping them a note when you have a question or about what's going on with the industry, dropping in when you're in the neighborhood, it all pays off. And you're looking for that day that the lead for that job, you either get a phone call from the person who was looking for someone or someone calls and says, hey, my friend Susan has got an opening right now for a charter pilot. And do I remember correctly? You've got X number of hours and a little bit of time and you got plenty of multi time. You should call her. This is where we're all trying to go. Now, flight instructing in particular, you do all those things we talked about when you're looking for a CFI job. One way, especially if you're, this is a little less applicable to academy type positions and certainly not to university training programs. But if you're talking about most flight schools, Part 61 types, if you can walk in and say, I've got two students and I'm looking for a place to instruct, you're bringing business with you. You're bringing your own students with you. You're not taking them away from somebody else. Unless they don't want the business or can't accommodate it right now, you got a good shot at getting hired there, right? So as we go into the next part, which has to do with your performance as a new CFI, and we're going to talk about recruiting students, this is something you should start right away, even before you become a flight instructor. If you've got some friends who are interested in becoming pilots, or if you can develop some, get to know them, turn them on to it as much as you can, and put yourself in a spot where you can go into ABC Flight School and say, I have two flight students and I'm looking for a good place to teach them. All right. Now, I just want to mention where we're going next, where I'm going to talk about performing in a CFI position. This information is in my book, The Savvy Flight Instructor, which is currently available only as ebook, but it's fully formatted and so on in ebook. And I'll mention this again later, but there's some good stuff in here, and I can say that not only because I think I've done some pretty good stuff there, but we also have some real expertise from other people who've contributed chapters. So keep this in mind if you're one of those people who is like, okay, I'm about to get my CFI or I just got it. What the heck do I do? All right, so this lining up students part, I want to emphasize, those of you who are looking for a CFI job or even working on your CFI, you should start this now. And then obviously, if you're already employed by a flight school, you still are interested in lining up students. So here are the must-have marketing tools you've got to have. You have to have a website. Now, everybody, we're all into social media and all this other stuff, but the bottom line is, if Jill Schultz is looking to take flying lessons, what's she going to do? She's going to do a Google search, right? So the website's the landing point. Now, if you're an independent flight instructor, you really need to have your own website. If you're working for a flight school, they've got a website. You might take a look at it and make sure it's welcoming. But that's essentially today's version of a brochure, right? You got to have something that explains what the process is for becoming a pilot, welcomes them to get them out to the airport. We all know how important social media is. Boy, for networking, can you beat that? And you may think business cards are obsolete, but they are not. When you bump into somebody at the gym while you're working out and they express any interest at all, you know, you get to talking and they find out you're a flight instructor, the business card, its sole purpose now is to get them to the website and, of course, provide your phone number. But the website is the landing spot. Okay, so when we talk about selling, flying, supporting networking, we got business cards. We'll talk about photo business cards in a moment here. Hats and clothing, we'll talk about that. Go to the Lions Club and give a talk on learning to fly. I mean, this is a great way to attract students, right? Look at your local community organizations and go give talks there. They're always looking for speakers. You can also man booths at civic events. You know, have your flight school or yourself get a booth there and have, now in that case, you may want to print some inexpensive brochures, like a trifold or something like that, that you have to hand out. So that's the one case where a paper brochure may be valuable. Teaching ground school is the most fantastic way to get students because they see you in action. They get to know you. You're the expert. And hey, by the way, you're a flight instructor, so they can go on with their training there. So keep in mind that you can earn your ground instructor certificate. You don't even have to be a pilot to do it. So I would encourage you to go ahead. I know there's always that question, should I take the AGI when I take the CFI written, because they're both very similar? I would say yes, because that's also a bargaining tool. If you go to a flight school, they got all the students they need, but if they want a live ground school, odds are nobody wants to teach it. That's a great starting point, is to go in there and say, hey, I'd like to teach a ground school. And if you teach it on your own, you can make a lot of money at it, because you can charge a couple hundred bucks a piece. And if you can get 10, 20 people in there, you can make, you know, pretty good income. What's more, you may be able to write off some of your flight training from taxes if you are already teaching ground school. Okay, photo business cards. This is my business card, and I'll grant you, it's a little bit romantic, a little silly, and the picture of me is very old, which people like to talk about, right? I don't look like that anymore. But when I meet somebody, I don't have to tell them I'm a flight instructor. I don't have to give any kind of song and dance about what I do. All I have to do is hand them my card. If they're one iota interested in flying, they're going to keep this card. They're going to go check out my website. They're going to scan the QR code and get over there. Photo business cards are very inexpensive to print. Just get a nice shot of yourself standing with an airplane in the cockpit. You probably got some already that are really nice. It doesn't have to have a sunset in it like mine does. But the bottom line is, this is something that shows a passion. And it shows, hey, I get to fly airplanes. Maybe you'd like to do that too. Okay? Now, here's another thing. This sounds simple, and it sounds maybe even primitive in our digital world. You should wear clothing that has airplanes and aviation on it everywhere you go. If you're at the gym, have a t-shirt, right? Have a hat that's got to do with flying. If you go out to a fancy event and wear a tie, as rare as those are now, get one with airplanes on it. Because anyone in the room who's the least bit interested, and it doesn't have to be an airplane you fly, right? It could be a 747 or an F-16 or anything you want. But if anybody else in the room is interested in flying, they're going to gravitate to you and talk to you. And now you got your photo business card to give them, right? To make these connections. So this stuff really facilitates networking, and it's easy. Now we'll just take a quick look at where do new students come from? A lot of folks took lessons years ago And for one reason or another, they either didn't quite finish or they quit. Now they're 40, 50, 60 years old, and they got the money and the time to become pilots. So that's a great group to solicit. And by the way, for those who are on Facebook, there's a terrific group called Student Pilots Over 50. I highly recommend that group because you'll see how many folks in there are looking for training, looking at buying airplanes, thousands of them. You'll see their enthusiasm, and you'll also learn a lot about instructing because at that age, they're much more game to share their challenges and their successes. It's a really great group, well moderated. Young pilots, you know, you go to Young Eagles events and do some flying there. I mean, sure, some of the kids will be 8 years old. They're too young. But a lot of them will be 15, 16, 17 years old. Their parents are there with them looking for something for the kid to do. It's terrible, isn't it? But women and minorities still do not have the representation you would expect as pilots, and therefore they offer opportunities. So those are groups to go after. Also, I saw something go by in the chat there about how old. You go to the student pilots over 50, there are people in their 70s learning to fly. There aren't a million of them, but there are a lot of folks who are, say, 35, 40, who think they're too old. Well, a lot of us are at least 35 or 40, right? They're not too old. So these are groups you can address. Even when you're looking at groups to speak with, speaking to a women's group, speaking to a group that's largely older people, there's prospects there, and not everybody is addressing them. A lot of career changers. I'll bet plenty of you are career changers. This is another group. They're eager to learn. They generally have money to proceed with their training. Let's talk for a moment about intro flights. Whenever I have someone who wants to take an intro flight, I discourage them from doing the discovery flight that's 20 minutes because they're not going to get enough out of it. Right? You're hardly going to get to do anything on it on a discovery flight. So I always say, hey, if you're seriously interested, let's do your first lesson. All right? I suggest we fly for an hour. And we'll do the pre-flight, which I'll teach you the pre-flight, and we'll go fly for an hour. And so you'll actually see what this is about. Ask them before you get in a plane, hey, why are you interested in learning to fly? Because the person who wants to be an airline pilot, actually, you might have some different guidance for them from the person who has a cottage up at the lake and wants to fly up there with the kids on weekends. And as much as you can orient that intro flight toward what they want to do, that will help encourage them to take the step and sign up. I think this goes without saying, deliver each intro flight as if it was to your best friend. The word student means you've got a lot to learn, a long way to go, and for some people it means you're a nobody so far, right? You're on the path, but as much as you can, talk to your students as fellow pilots. Talk about piloting. Don't use the word student much. I mean, technically they're student pilots, so you got to say that when you fill out the form. But at the end of the intro flight, you want your prospect to have flown the plane enough and gained enough control so they can say, I can do this. They go home and say, honey, I flew the airplane for almost the whole lesson. So obviously you're not going to have them doing soft field landings on the intro flight, but get them comfortable on the controls, have them make some turns and climbs and descents, have them pick out some points on the horizon and fly to them. So they're flying the plane because you want them to think, I'll be wasting today's lesson if I don't continue. Make sense? That's what we want to do on the intro flight. Wait a minute, you're going to let them leave without scheduling the next lesson? All right, so I've got this buddy, Manny Peralta. He's an instructor in Australia and a real sharp guy, and he told me about his willing, able, and ready intro lesson checklist. When the person arrives at the airport, he asks them, you know, hey, tell me about your interest in flying. And he says if they built model aircraft, flew with their mom, remember he's Australian, or watched planes as a kid. He says a long history of interest in aviation shows a passion, and that passion leads to training, perseverance, especially through first solo. So he has learned that less than 2 years of interest suggests they're far less likely to fly. Now, that's not actionable in itself, but it just does tell you a little bit about where the prospect is. Able, will finances allow you to fly consistently if you start lessons now? That's a great question, right? Because, like, they may be in a position where they can pay as you go, or depending on your type of program, they may need to save some money before they start so that they don't run out of money partway through. This is a discussion to have with them. You'd rather, if they don't have the money to follow through, you're actually better off to engage them as much as you can in some activities, maybe ground school, and, you know, get them started at the airport, but tell them, why don't you save up a little money, X number of dollars, and then based on that plus your income, we can get you flying. Are they ready? Can I book your next lesson for later today or next Saturday? Willing, able, and ready. That's what he looks for on intro flights. And I think it's a great way to look at things. Now, flying is expensive, right? It's always been expensive. Now, I do have to tell you that I found the receipt for my private pilot check ride in 1972, and the bill was $35, including the instructor and the plane. But gas for my car was a quarter. You go through and do the math and stuff, you figure out that the $35 was a lot of money back then. It's hard to picture now when we're talking hundreds and even thousands of dollars. But the bottom line, it's always been expensive. So we want to sell value versus pricing. We got to be in a position to explain why this is a good value. The best thing to do is you lay out the FAA minimums. We've all seen them, and, you know, it's 40 hours or 35 in a 141 school. But we also know, and you've got a price associated with that, so you tell them. But we also know very few people succeed in doing this, especially outside of any kind of an academy environment. So we also, I've got one step ahead of myself here. So we also, next to it, we lay out what we think it will really cost. Is it going to take them 50 hours, 60 hours? If they're older, it might take even more than that. Be honest with them. Show them a breakdown. In my experience, you know, this is probably what it will really take. Now, how can they mitigate those expenses and get closer to the FAA minimums and farther from the 100-hour private by controlling training costs? And we all know what the tricks to that are. One, you get a good instructor, because it's not the hourly rate that determines how quickly you get your, how inexpensively you get your license, your certificate. It's not the hourly rate. It's having a great instructor. You're way better off with a terrific instructor who's more expensive than someone who's not very good, not very committed, who's the cheapest on the block. So you've got to interview people and pick the person that you feel is a good value. But the big deal on controlling training costs is preparation, right? They need to know right up front, if you prepare for every lesson, I'll tell you how to prepare. But if you prepare, you're going to save a lot of money. And then you can talk to them about the fact that the rental aircraft rate and the instructor rate are two different things. And once they get into the solo phase, their lessons will be less expensive, right? Because they're not going to be paying for the instructor for the whole thing. And then in terms of your income, offer other services, a simulator. You can be selling, in cockpit videos, very popular stuff right now, selling the equipment, the software, and so on. So you have some other things you can offer them that they would like to have to earn additional income. But the bottom line is, don't be afraid of the bottom line. You gotta be upfront with them about what this is going to cost. Now, how do we put that in perspective, what it's going to cost? Let's look at some other things that people spend money on right now. This is particularly in a Part 61 environment, excuse the expression, where people are coming in to earn their private as opposed to a someone headed for a professional career. A second car costs $12,000, $15,000 if it's a decent car now, right? A kitchen remodel, I don't think you can do it for $20,000 anymore. So when your customers come in, especially if you're a young flight instructor, someone who doesn't have a lot of money yourself, you've got to understand, if the person drives up in a BMW or something, they want to take flying lessons, you've got to get out of the mindset of, for me, $12,000, $15,000 to earn my private is a lot of money. I don't know how I would do it again. You got to get in their mindset, and you can tell them, let's look at some other things you could spend that kind of money on, right? And for similar money or a little less, you get the keys to piloting adventure. Now, the other point here is, when you get ready to go buy a car, you prepare with your finances. You have a plan. You're going to finance it, or you save your money to buy it, but you have a plan. All these other things require planning ahead. It's also true for the average clientele we have, flight students, right? Many of them will need to plan. And that's where you want to be sure that they know what they're getting into, and you can help them figure out how it's going to be pay as you go. I recommend two lessons a week. You can do the math on that and say, so your budget ought to be this much per month. Okay? So this is just to help you make the sale. Now, once they get started, we got a couple tricks we can use. They're not really tricks, but tools to keep them going. One, you've got to treat them as equals and question them, involve them in decisions from the beginning. All right? From the very beginning. So we're going to go up today and do soft field landings. Well, instead of just teaching it right off, say, well, what do you think we would be concerned about on a soft field landing? How would you feel what do you think would happen if the nose wheel sank down into soft soil while you were landing? So you ask them those questions always. You involve them in the decision making. And if they're not comfortable with the answer, so here's an example I like to give. You're teaching them, you're doing pre-flight, and they notice there's a crack in a plastic fairing, right? We know that's not structural, it doesn't matter. But they're concerned, there's a big crack. So you say to them, well, it's not structural, it doesn't matter, but you can see in their face, it's just not, you know what, Sue, why don't you go get the mechanic? Bring him out, let him take a look, satisfy yourself from the expert that the plane is safe to fly. You see, you're teaching a great habit there, and you're also teaching them to question you. And I have actually, as a matter of course, I've told my students, if you can catch me in something I'm wrong in, I'll buy you lunch. Because I want them to dig into this and learn it. I don't want them to believe everything I say. I want them to be involved. That makes them PIC. It empowers them to deal with stuff. Why do we have such a poor ratio where huge percentage, as much as 80% of flight students drop out? Why does that happen? Unhappy with the CFI, CFI turnover, no validation of CFI opinions. The bottom line is, I'm stuck in the mud and I can't finish this thing. I'm not getting anywhere. We've all been there, right? This is the syllabus. We all know what a syllabus is for. It's critically important, especially for a new CFI. If you're just starting at like a Part 61 flight school and they don't provide a syllabus, get a hold of one from a 141 school. Not saying you have to follow it literally, but my first CFI job was with a 141 school, and I learned the process through that syllabus. But you got to have a syllabus that you like, whether no matter where it comes from, especially as a new CFI. You're following it as an experienced CFI too, but it's in your head more and you can be more flexible. But this tells you what you should be doing on each lesson. But there's more that you can do with a syllabus. The person feels like they're stuck in the mud. They feel like they're not getting anywhere. At the end of every lesson on the debrief, you should show them where they are on the syllabus. You see, you're making your way through here. And then you can talk to them about the fact that, like the solo cross country, that's going to go real fast because you're going to do several hours per flight. Right? So show them where they are so they know where they're going. Also, I don't know why the heck these things aren't on the syllabus. They ought to be. They should be on your syllabus. Two of your biggest challenges with new students are going to be the flight physical and a knowledge test. You'll have people who can't take their check ride. Some of you have probably been there because they haven't taken the knowledge test. You got to put it on there and say, you got to take the knowledge test before your solo cross country, period. That's when you got to take it. Tell them. And the flight physical, that is a minefield. And you need to have your students call AOPA at minimum, talk to the medical department. If they can't afford to join AOPA, they can't afford to fly. So they join AOPA, they call the pilot hotline before they go for the flight physical, and they chat with the people there about any conditions they may have and any prep they need, because what a drag it is if they get started, get partway through here, go for the flight physical right before solo, and it turns out that they were missing a note from their doctor about blood pressure medication, and it gets deferred. We don't want to be there. We don't want to lose our customers. We don't want to spoil their dream. So you got to get them investigating the flight physical pronto, because very often there's a way to get around health issues that might pop up, but you got to know about it ahead of time. Okay, you want to recognize client achievements. Not only does this make them feel good, but they market you as a result. So have your camera ready, get a picture of them at first solo so that they share with them, they can share with all their friends on social media, anything you give them that they can use or wear. I'm gonna skip back past that. Keep in mind that stuff like your first landing accomplished by yourself, I mean with the instructor, but your first decent landing, that's a big deal. So a lot of the things, the accomplishments that are big in a person's mind, they're not just solo. It's not just first cross country, though those are biggies. But anytime, first time they make a trip and work on the radio properly. So some people will actually do things to reward them for that. Aviator or aviatrix decal for your rear window. You want one of those? Your students, what a kick. They solo. She solos and she gets this to put on her car. You think anybody's going to ask her about it? You think anybody's going to ask her where she's learning to fly when she tells them she's doing it? And we all know the big deal now with cockpit video. Some of us are into it and some aren't, but they're going to post that on social media, I'll guarantee you. And then, hey, that's my friend Matt Rhodes there. Matt, where are you taking lessons? You're a pilot? All right. One other critical thing here. I learned this a long time ago. If I go out the airport and I make some terrible landings on lesson number 7, and I say to myself, Greg, you're not cut out for this. You're not going to be a pilot. You 7 lessons in, I still can't do decent landings. If I'm allowed to leave the airport with that feeling, I probably won't come back tomorrow for my next $300 lesson, will I? You can't let people leave the airport when they've had a bad lesson. And what's more, you got to have a network they're talking with. But the pep talk, if any one of you who's on this, how many do we have here? 100, couple hundred, right? Or 150, whatever. I can't see it here. Any one of you, no matter where you are in your training, if I go walking out of there and I bump into you, you're going to give me a 5-minute pep talk and say, Greg, I got 20 hours and I'm still trying to get my landings right. Or I'm an airline captain and I just bounced one yesterday. And all of a sudden I'm vindicated. Hey, wait a minute. I'm not flawed. This is part of the process. You've got to provide pep talks for your students, and you want them to meet each other and have social events and gather, lean on each other to share stories and provide pep talks. Another thing is, post a picture of the learning plateau out of the flight instructor handbook at your desk, because everybody encounters a learning plateau. And you want to use this as a tool when someone gets discouraged and say, see this? This is so common. It's in the flight training handbook. And every pilot encounters this at every stage of training. And you can even read them the little passage from the handbook, which is, every student will experience blah, blah, blah. Schedule the next lesson before the client leaves. Mark your calendar if you don't hear from them for a while and give them a call. Welcome them back. It's really important that they know how they're paying for ground instruction. Are they paying for all of it? Are they paying for the whole hour? Are they not paying for ground? Whatever it is, you got to make it clear, because you don't want to get in a spot where you're not charging them because you think they're not expecting it or whatever. You got to let them know about that up front. And also tell them if you're prepared, you'll pay a lot less ground training, right? Never end a lesson on a bad note and treat your students as aviation equals. Okay, so I see we're coming up on the hour here. All I'm going to say here is sometimes we get so trapped in the syllabus, especially in a Part 61 environment, that we don't offer lessons that our students would benefit from because they're outside the syllabus. But a lot of people will gladly invest in these things. Experience a real grass strip. Today's a windy day. Pretty big crosswind. Boy, it'd be a great learning day. It's not actually on the syllabus per se, but let's go up and tackle this because you'll be a better pilot if your budget allows it. And then the other thing about optional lessons is if someone's discouraged, the best thing you can do is fly somewhere for lunch or go visit a flight service facility if there's one nearby, or approach control. Somewhere where they're going to just fly the plane from here to there and say, wow, I can fly this plane, even though I'm having a rough time with power on stalls. And then back to that first comment at the beginning, we don't want to forget for ourselves or our students why we're all doing this. There's no shame in having a passion for what you do and having fun. And I'm not talking about fun like buzzing houses, the bad stuff. I'm talking about getting a kick out of flying an airplane, seeing the earth from above. We want to share that kick. If we share that kick, people will go through anything if they have a passion for it. They'll make every effort, they'll overcome every obstacle. We want to instill that passion. Okay, I want to make a couple comments. I mentioned to you that I go into a great deal of detail, provide a lot of resources in the Savvy Flight Instructor Now ebook. The second edition, the one with the clouds, is the one you want. It's still possible to buy the book or download the first edition, and it's got a lot of the same teaching stuff in it, so it's still valid. But the second edition incorporates all of the modern media things to promote yourself and so on. The original came out, I think, in 98. And the newer one is, a couple of years old. So be sure if you do decide you want to get it, that you get the one with the clouds on the cover that says second edition. I also have a number of video and audio interviews and so on my website, gregbrownflyingcarpet.com, which are, of course, free. And I think for NAFI, for SAFE, for AOPA, on different instructional topics, they are there for you if you are interested in seeing them. Relative to the podcast, I mentioned Bowling Alley Hot Dogs. I think it's 20 minutes long. Folks, we will all, one of the things that always comes up on casual Zoom discussions is, what if someone, you know, what if someone loses control of the plane while you're in it? You know, what are the mistakes they can make that might kill me and so on? Well, I'll tell you about a few of them there. The Flying Carpet book, as I mentioned, you'll probably enjoy this. Some of you have read it. It's a great book for students or for prospects. And it's readily available in book and ebook. My books are all published by ASA. I also, just for the heck of it, I'll mention this. I do a lot of aerial photography, and I've got a lot of it on my website. If you're interested, one of the things I do with the aerial photography is make these custom pilot achievement plaques for people. So if you have someone who's just really dying to have something to celebrate, you might take a peek at those. They get their choice of one of my professional photos, and then their photo and the details of their accomplishment. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this talk. We have a limited outline, but an outline on the CFI Bootcamp page for this episode. And I hope to beat you guys around. So thank you for listening.
Live from CFI Bootcamp in Miami Beach, Florida, this is the Power Hour. Welcome.